Blog Talk Radio.
Real gon' recognize, real gon' recognize, real gon' recognize, real, real. Phony gon' recognize, still, I reckon I will.
Like we always do with this time, I go for mine, I get to shine. Now throw your hands up in the sky. I go for mine, I get to shine. Now throw your hands up in the sky.
Yeah, 4-3-2011, baby. Welcome to the KRRP Radio Show. I am your host, Pudgy, WMMG, home of the KRRP Radio Show. And we are back live in the building in KRRP Studios. Got special guests tonight, man. We got quite the show for you tonight. Hope everybody listening out there had a beautiful Sunday. Hope everybody went in and got their word in. Got your word in. Somebody call in, give me some of that good word that y'all got today, man. Share some of that love with me and, you know, make me feel good so I can feel like how you all felt in your services today. You know, with all due and respect to my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, don't play like that, but, you know, God said we are the image of him, so I'm pretty sure he has a sense of humor when we're speaking right, and as long as it's not blasphemy. You dig what I'm saying? Shout out to everybody on there who left me messages on the topics that we have for this show this evening. Man, there was a lot going on Facebook this weekend. I will say that. A lot of people had some strong opinions about some of the things that I posted. A lot of people agreed. A lot of people didn't. You know, it is what it is. I kind of feel like maybe I should apologize because I went on a black man's rant, some might call it. You know, I feel real strongly about the things that are going on in our community. So, you know, when you get on that topic, and I'm very passionate about it, you know what I mean? And I'm actually someone that's out there proactive and trying to do something to educate those who, what I feel, are less educated and don't know exactly what's going on in the community. So, Shout out to everybody who was on my Facebook page this weekend, on my Twitter page. You know, you are B-I-G in my book. That's the catchphrase. Get to know it. Get familiar with it. To all those who are listening on the phone lines, you get home, you get in front of your computer, log on to www.krrpradioshow.com. You can also get us on the Facebook and leave your comments on there, and I'll do my best to get back to you guys as soon as possible. And the Facebook page is facebook.com/KRRP Radio Show. On Twitter, @KRRP Radio Show. And you can hit us up on YouTube. We're going to start posting more. We got to get more YouTube footage on there. Shout out to my man Taliban, who's not here. But on the YouTube, you know what it is, youtube.com/KRRP Radio Show. And this is the Ding Ding main event. Folks, I got a really special guest that I'm going to bring on here right after the first commercial, and that will be really, really, really shortly. I'll get this man on the horn and see if we can't get down to the nitty gritty, as the old folks used to say. We're going to get down to the nitty gritty, talk about some things that everybody need to know about, and some things that I think in the black community that we have some misconceptions about. You know what? Forget the black community. I think the world in general has the misconceptions about the topics of this show, and two of the topics, and you know, I keep it real with myself. I'm Pudgy, so I got to keep it real with you. We're going to talk about the term house nigga, okay? I know a lot of people don't like that. House nigger, it is what it is. Don't get mad at me. People use the word. And the A and the ER does make a difference. However, in this time, I think they somewhat mean the same. I think we use these words recklessly. I think they don't apply in today's times for the most part, and I think we need to know where these words originated from before we can do away with them, because, you know, if the word is needed, we'll keep it. If it's not needed, I think we need to bury it 6 feet, 12 feet under and do what we can. So I'm going to bring on shortly, you know, right after the first commercial, I'm going to bring on a valiant gentleman, a very renowned author, Mr. Ron Miller. Ronald E. Miller, to be exact. Hit him up on Facebook. Look him up, facebook.com. Go to the search, put in Ronald E. Miller, author. This is the man. He's someone that's out there actually doing right in the name of righteousness and not for the mighty dollar. This man travels near and far. He spends a lot of his spare time away from his family, I might add, to do some of the things that need to be done, so far as talking to the youth, or talking to some grown-ups, you know, talking to some adults, talking to the politicians, talking to the local leaders, talking to the church community. This man spends his way away from home and on his blog and on his website talking about some important things that need to be said and things that need to be done. But first, before we even get into that, we're going to talk about Uncle Tom, the term. Uncle Tom, you ain't nothing but a Tom. Know y'all heard that before. Some of y'all probably used the term before. I know I used it before. Before I realized what it was, I was giving the man a compliment and didn't even realize it. You ain't nothing but a Tom. But a lot of you guys use that term and you don't mean it as a compliment. You don't mean it as a term of endearment. And frankly, I think a lot of people don't know what the word means, what you know, a Tom is, or where the term even came from. You know, I guarantee if we surveyed 100 people to find out, you know, where the word came from, I guarantee you without Google, 100 people, I would say 90. Let me go on the safe side. If I was a betting man, which I am, I'd say 75% of them have no idea where the term Uncle Tom came from. So shout out to Ronald E. Miller, who we're going to bring on here. Real soon, we're going to bring Mr. Miller on here, and we're going to get some things going on. Also, want to give a shout out to some people. Well, let me give a shout out, an individual shout out to one individual, one gentleman who is doing some terrific things in the name of what I want to call a black understanding, or the new black initiative, and that's founder of the Frederick Douglass Foundation, Mr. Dr. Major Timothy E. Johnson. That's special when you got so many names to call somebody, you don't know what to go by. You don't even know what to tell them. Yeah, I can call him doctor. You can call him major. He said you can call me sergeant too. I've been one of those too. So, shout out to Timothy Johnson, man, founder and chairman of the Frederick Douglass Foundation International, real soon, if not now, and also the vice chair of the GOP in North Carolina. So I want to give a special shout out to that man and all you who are listening. We're going to go to a commercial here real soon, and we're going to get some callers in here. We're going to play one song later on in the evening, something that I think you all need to hear, and I'm going to see if I can get some guests to take some questions on that. And stay tuned. Ronald E. Miller is a special guest going to commercial. One love.
Do you have a garage full of old junk? At least you think it's old junk. How about a storage that you've been paying the bill on for so long and you've just been moving stuff into and you're ready to get rid of it when you look at it all the time? Well, if you do, make sure you contact Faulkner's Antiques before you throw it away. Again, that's Faulkner's Antiques out of Burlington, North Carolina. Faulkner's will pay you top dollar for estates, sterling, old furniture, pottery, signs, old toys, and etc. Faulkner's Antiques, they specialize in some of the most prolific antiques in this part of Eastern North Carolina or the USA. So make sure you contact Wayne Prophet at Faulkner's Antiques, 336-214-6427. Again, that's Wayne Prophet. That's the man you want to talk to at Faulkner's Antiques, 336-214-6427. And if you get a hold of Wayne, guess what? He'll come to you free of charge. And if you can't get to him at that number, make sure you dial this other number, 336-675-4897. And don't forget, Wayne Prophet at Faulkner's Antiques says, don't forget the reason for the season. Heat messing up in this winter. Is the snow just getting on your last daggone nerves? Are you cold and you gotta put on a snuggie in the house? That's not comfortable. No, it's not comfortable. Are you a grown man wearing your wife's footies? Are they pink? You scared to go check your mailbox with your wife's footies on and as cold as it is inside as it is outside? Well, I'll tell you what you do. If you're looking for a friend, contact Riley Heating and Cooling. If your ductwork needs a facelift, Riley Heating and Cooling will facelift your ductwork. Are you getting the most for your dollar? If you're not, Riley Heating and Cooling will make sure you get the most for your dollar. Ask about their five-point inspection service. They have trained professionals that offers 25 years of experience. To contact Riley Heating and Cooling, call 336-263-5111. Again, that's 336-263-5111, and you'll find a friend at Riley Heating and Cooling.
WMMG, home of the KRRP radio show. I am back in the building, and I got a lot to talk about today. A lot of important things we're going to talk about. A lot of important things going on. We got a lot of events going on. And I have a very special guest tonight that we're going to ask a few questions. And we're going to let him talk about, or we're going to allow him this platform to talk about his book to a very, very different audience. I think we have all sorts of people on this show. This is one thing that I love about the KRRP radio show and that you got to love. We have people from every walk of life in this, like every different walk of life. There are people from all over the place that do this and that listen to the show and that appreciate the message that we're trying to do today, or the things that we're trying to accomplish, I want to say. So you won't get another show like this, folks. You won't get another politically talk social radio show that covers the topics that we cover and that talk about the things that we talk about with the audience that we have. So allow me 1 second to bring on a special guest who is an author, who was also an Air Force vet, who has done numerous things around the country and numerous talks. He runs two radio sites. You know what? I'll let the man introduce himself. Ron, are you there?
I am here.
Hey, Ron, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine this evening. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to this.
Hey, man, you know what? I really can't express how happy I am that you could make this show, especially on short notice. We were actually going to do the show on Project Housings and the history of and where it's going. But you know what? We got to prepare for that a little bit more. There's a few more things that I want to cover. There's some things I'm unsure about that I feel like I need to read on a little bit more. And it's a touchy subject. It's a very touchy subject, especially for where we're heading. Tell us a little bit about, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind, sir.
I don't mind at all. Well, I'm a commentator. I'm an author. Published my first book last summer, and that's going to be one of the central themes we talk about tonight. The book is called Sell Out, Musings from Uncle Tom's Porch. When you talk about names being called, I've got them all in the title. So we'll talk about why I came up with that title and some of the things that people may not know about some of those words that are being thrown around out there casually.
Right.
I've been a conservative ever since I left home and realized that the things my parents raised me to believe and the political allegiances they had didn't line up. And when I asked them, whenever they asked me, why am I a Republican? Why am I a conservative? I always tell them, Mom, Dad, you raised me that way. And I'm betting that a lot of folks out there could say the same thing. I just decided that in order for me to take the values I have, which are built all around the lordship of Jesus Christ,
yes, sir,
then I need to have those values reflect every area of my life. There is no area of my life, including my political beliefs, that should be excluded from his commands and his lordship. So it's really simple for me. I have great clarity and great peace just for that reason. But had a quick, pretty interesting life. Grew up as an Air Force brat, so I traveled all over the world.
Right.
In fact, I lived in a different place. I moved on average every 2 years before I turned 18.
Wow.
And then I went to college and started my own journeys. I joined the Air Force myself, was an intelligence officer in the Air Force for 9 years, and did my own travels there. Lived in a variety of states and foreign countries, and eventually ended up in Washington, D.C., or at least in the area, in 2001 when I was called up to join the Bush administration, and I served as a senior executive at FEMA, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Small Business Administration. And I've held a lot of different jobs in the private sector as an executive, the nonprofit sector. I work with the American Red Cross, and currently I have my own consulting firm, and I've dedicated myself to this message of making us equal heirs to the American dream, that we've got a great history and a great legacy. And so many of the policies that are out there that are supposed to be for the black community and so much of the socialization of the black community is geared toward making us distinct when 485 years of struggle is all about liberty and making us part of the dream. Our blood, toil, sweat, and tears are invested in this country as much as anyone else's. And
we want to be
equal heirs to that. We don't want to be separate. We don't want to be a people apart. We want to join together with all of our brothers and sisters and make this country what it can be for all of the people that come here for freedom and liberty. So that's a message I think is important enough for me to basically do a career change in the middle of my life. And I thank you for your kind words. I've been out there. I usually tell groups, they're always surprised. They say, what's your fee? I said, just let me sell my book. And if it's a long ways away, help me with my travel. Other than that, I'll be there. Because I want people to get the message. I want people to understand that there is a different point of view out there, that certainly the black community is not this monolithic community where we all think alike or act alike. At least I know Jesse and Al probably want us to think that way, but that's not the case. And we want to do something about it. And people like you are helping us do things about that. When you go out there, you're not sitting there complaining about the way the media isn't listening to our voices. You created your own media, and I want to salute you for that.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, too. Ron, here's something that I noticed about you, man, and that made me reach out to you. There were several other people, but I reached out to you first, and you responded. Man, you are one consistent person. I did my homework. You're one consistent person. Jesus Christ, let me tell you. I don't think I've come across one interview or one blog or one posting or one comment that you've made or that you wrote that was inconsistent, not one. And man, I want to congratulate you on that, because we're in a day and a time where, I mean, the media is out there and it's easy access for one to compare an old interview or a new interview or something up, something, you know, something in the same terms of an interview. But, man, you're consistent. And we don't have that so much out of anyone. I mean, anyone at all, and especially not our leaders. And, like I posted on my page, I said, you know what, this man is one of the leaders. This man is one of the leaders, so I really commend you on that. Where did the name of your book, Musings from Uncle Tom's Porch, where did that come from, huh?
Well, you might remember that back in 2009, the newly appointed Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, on the occasion of Black History Month, declared that we were a nation of cowards when it came to the topic of race, that we weren't willing to speak candidly with one another. Right. And I took exception to that comment at the time, because not because I disagreed with that in principle. I would love to see us be able to talk to one another about the subject of race free of preconceived notions about the other, one person or the other. Just to sit down and honestly put things out there on the table and try to work through things. That's how we solve problems. But he knows that if any of us try to speak with any degree of candor about race, and we basically steer away from the prescribed narrative, you know, this is the way you're supposed to say it. If you're not politically correct, if you don't stay within the lines that have been drawn, then you're going to be introduced to a whole lot of names your parents didn't give you.
Yeah.
You're going to be called, and I list them in the book, you're going to be called a sellout.
Oh,
you're going to
yeah.
be called a step and fetch it, Uncle Tom, House Negro, or House Nigga. And, you know, it's funny, you bring that up, and you actually touched a sore subject with me at the moment. My son, who is an athlete in high school and is hanging around a lot of other athletes, is starting to pick that up. And he's a gentle-hearted kid. He's a good kid, but I want to sit him down and say, look, I'm really not comfortable with you using that with your friends. I know they use it with you and you back, but there's some issues there we need to talk about. And, man, I never thought in all the time that that would be something I'd have to talk about, but it's just the way the culture is out there. So
man.
The whole reason for the title is because, number one, anybody who tries to talk about race candidly is going to end up being called all kinds of names. And it's not only the black community that's going to come after them. And by the community, I'm usually referring to the leadership, because I think a lot of people take their lead. I also think that, and it's one of those weird things that really disturbs me, a white person has permission from the black orthodoxy to be racist to black conservatives. That makes sense? They can actually go out there and sling racially charged comments at black conservatives and not be defended by the black community. I saw that happen personally back in 2006 when Michael Steele was running for the U.S. Senate here in Maryland. And mm-hmm. people were saying and doing some, I mean, they were drawing images of him as a simple Sambo with big lips and all kinds of things. And somebody asked a black state senator out of Baltimore why the black delegation of the Maryland General Assembly wasn't rising up. I mean, this was not only a black American, a fellow black American, it was their lieutenant governor. Why weren't they rising up against all of this imagery, against all of these words and things that were being thrown out there so casually by black and white liberals alike? And
right.
I have never forgotten her answer. Party trumps race.
Wow. You serious?
I am serious. She said it. It's documented, and I've never forgotten it. And,
oh, my gosh.
You know, if you look at the kind of policies that the Black Caucus pursues that they say are for black people, for the benefit of black people, and then
yeah.
you examine them one at a time, they are either killing or demeaning black people. Yet they're going to, and that it's because party trumps race. It's more important to them to have a seat at the table of power and influence in that party than it is for them to do things that are genuinely going to help black people.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What about when it comes to organizations such as, at the forefront of my mind, the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and then you have, let's just say, the NAACP. You know, what about organizations such as those two?
Well, I have to tell you that the NAACP has basically become irrelevant as far as I'm concerned, and I think a lot of people agree, because it no longer stands as an advocate for the black community They're not even in the black community trying to do things to help fix the problems that need to be fixed. They're more interested in chasing after these racist boogeymen they see in the Tea Party. So they're basically irrelevant.
Oh,
and it's really embarrassing because I've seen them get all exercised about an audio greeting card where supposedly the character is saying black whore when in fact it's a card about astronomy and the character is saying black hole. And then somebody actually said that black hole is racist. They should call it a white hole. And I'm saying, where in the world are you people going? They are destroying a historical a legacy of a group that has done great things in the past, but they are completely irrelevant today. But I do want to give a shout out to two groups that I think are standing strong. I mean, there are a lot of black conservatives groups out there, and I am engaged with many of them. But I am so, so proud of Dr. Johnson and the Frederick Douglass Foundation, so much so that after the last meeting, I want to try and start a chapter here in Maryland, because I think that the work they are doing to build a community not only that lives their values in all areas of their lives, but they're actually going out there and they're doing things. They are acting. They're not just talking about it. And I just think it's the men and women in that organization, and it is not restricted to black people. You know, anyone who believes in the cause of the Frederick Douglass Foundation can join. And they are out there doing things, and they're just great men and women of great integrity. I'm honored to be associated with them. And I've met a gentleman down from Houston. Mm-hmm. And if you ever get a chance to have him on your show, you ought to invite him. His name is Apostle Claver Kamau Imani. It's a mouthful, but I have been to his sessions and heard him speak. He's got a different mission. His mission is to bring people of color into the Republican Party, period. And he uses data and research. And when you're done listening to him, he'll have you convinced, number one, Republicans and conservatives have to do something about bringing more people of color into the party, because before long, minorities are going to be the majority in America. That's a fact. That's where the demographics are going. And these are people whose values align with the Republican Party's values, but they've been taught for so long that the Republican Party is hostile to them. So he is taking polls. He's going into communities and he's asking questions independent of party affiliation. And he's coming up with some amazing numbers. 81 to 90% of the answers he's getting back on these questions point to these communities being conservative. And basically, when he has that data, he says, okay, you are a conservative. Now vote like one.
Wow.
And
that's
in
big,
fact,
too.
If you ever saw an ad out there called GOP is the New Black, that's it.
Yes. Really?
Yeah.
I have seen
that
too.
He's a dynamic young person. He gave up his church down in Houston to dedicate himself to this. And like I said, if you sit down and hear him speak, by the time you're done, you want to put on the armor and charge out there. He really did. So,
you know, I like
give those.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead. I just wanted to give those two organizations the credit that they're due.
And I appreciate that, too, being a member of the Frederick Douglass Foundation of North Carolina. I would say of the whole organization, but of North Carolina, I had the liberty to meet Kevin Daniels, which is the North Carolina president of FDF. And I found myself in several places that he was already in. And so we started talking, and we shared a couple of ideas, and we shared some views, and we talked about some facts. And man, he sent me a boatload of information, and you know what? I've been a member and a fan, and Kevin is a good friend of mine ever since. You know, and it's been quite a run since I've gotten with the Frederick Douglass Foundation. So these guys that I know of personally, these guys, they're movers and shakers, and I appreciate that. And them, they too are consistent, and that's something to me that's very important. If just for a second, just for sake of my show, you know, not saying that my audience doesn't understand, but I just want to do something a little bit different because I haven't even done this myself. I want to just take a rewind back, and I'm just going to ask you to, if you could, probably better than I'm sure, explain what the definition of a Democrat is in your own words.
A Democrat, in my words, is a person who believes that all solutions reside in government. They don't have faith that the American people or the families or communities that have comprised our republic are capable of solving all the problems. They believe the collective action of government is the solution. And they have faith that government is going to solve these problems without compromising our liberty, when history tells us the exact opposite. And I believe that when you look at what they are, what their philosophy eventually essentially embraces, it's equality of outcome. They see the world around them. They don't like the way it looks. They want equality of outcome. They don't want equality of opportunity, where people go out there and they give it their best and they may fall.
Right.
I will tell you that in equality of opportunity, if you fall and you've been trying, there are people there that are going to be there to help you up. If you fall, as Frederick Douglass said, if you fall down and get back up, there will be people there to help you. But if you fall down and stay down, you're on your own.
You're on your own.
And I think it's really important for people to realize that the difference between equality of outcome is that for people to all end up with the same thing, somebody's got to give something up, but it's probably going to be taken from them. But for us to achieve the best we can with everything we have, that means that it is only limited by our work and our potential.
Hmm.
And that is a major difference between a conservative. And I always emphasize conservative because I know there are some Republicans out there who aren't conservative. So I always say I'm conservative first, but I am also a Republican and have been a loyal Republican for over 30 years. So that is my definition.
That's something I was going to get to next. I think most folks nowadays, they somewhat realize the difference of a Democrat and a Republican, but they don't apply it to themselves for whatever reason. And I find that strange in the black community, but that's what's happening. And somehow we got to change the mindset of and the understanding that, hey, this is what you believe, this is what you live. Now, why don't we vote people with like similarities? Are we still to the fact where we won't vote that way because of the turn of events in the civil rights era? Or, you know, I don't know. I'm clueless on it. I'm absolutely clueless on it. Personally, I think it's a I think it's a lack of education in these agendas. And that's just what
I tend to agree with that. I mean, the fact is that people that they trusted gave them a point of view, and they have adhered to that point of view. The problem is that we don't have the megaphone that the liberals have. And this is one thing people always ask me. And if you look at polls about what Americans believe, 70% of Americans believe in individual liberty, personal responsibility, free enterprise, all of those things that America was founded on. 70% of us believe that, according to the polls.
Right.
So the question is, why are we being led by the 30% and have been for some time? And the answer is this: we don't own the megaphone. And by the megaphone, we aren't prevalent in academia, the entertainment industry,
mm-hmm.
and the press. If you think about it, between our schools, the entertainment industry, and the press, they have infinite ability to penetrate our homes, our schools, our communities, and to constantly put a message out there. And that message becomes the accepted way of doing things. That's why you've seen such an explosion in conservative media on the internet, on talk radio, on YouTube and video and other alternative means, is because we're basically trying to create our own megaphone to counter theirs.
Hmm.
And if you, for generations, have been told the same thing, and it's been reinforced through all of those things, through academia, through the entertainment industry, through the media, then it's going to be very hard for you to persuade people otherwise. When I went home and I told Mom and Dad that nothing the Democrats support in their platform aligns with the things we believe, why are we Democrats? Their answer was, Republicans hate black people. Now, consider that my parents were born and raised in the Deep South, Dad in
right.
Georgia, Mom in Louisiana. And for the time frame in which they were raised, the people who were inflicting Jim Crow laws on them, who put the colored water fountains versus the white water fountains, who said they had to sit at the back of the bus, who had segregated lunch counters, all of that stuff. Those were Democrats doing that to them. So where in the world did they ever get the notion that Republicans hate black people?
Mm.
In fact, all the way up to 1964, the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which is considered to be the linchpin of the civil rights movement,
yeah.
So it's what that would not have passed if it wasn't for Republican Senate Minority Leader Everett Dirksen bringing the Republicans along and building an alliance with Northern Democrats to make that pass. The people who were filibustering that bill were Democrats.
What happened, Ron, that makes people believe that? Because that's embedded in the black communities, and I don't get it, man. The history is there. It's well documented. I know that one problem is we don't teach it. It's not being taught in the public schools, and, you know, all we get is Martin Luther King marched, and that's pretty much it. Flip the page, and now we're in a new chapter in social studies, if they still teach social studies now. So, I mean, what in the world happened that embedded that in the minds of our parents and our parents' parents?
Well, the thing that happened was basically a phone call. Up until about 1960, it started in the 1930s when Franklin Roosevelt took over, and he started to use the New Deal as a way to reach out to people who were suffering from the Great Depression. And as you know, the black community usually suffers more during these economic downturns because they started at a lower level and they've been trying to work their way up for generations. So they benefited a lot from the New Deal. At least that's their perception. But even then, as recently as 1960, when Richard Nixon was the Republican nominee, he got 32% of the black vote. The next election, 1964, Barry Goldwater, Republican nominee, he got 4% of the black vote. And it's never gone above 11% since. So what happened between Richard Nixon and Barry Goldwater? Well, Daddy King,
yeah.
Martin Luther King Sr., called the White House to ask for help. His son, Martin Luther King Jr., was in prison, and he wanted his help in getting his son out of jail. And he made a promise that if they could help him get his son out of jail, he would deliver them the black vote. And what was interesting about that commitment was that John F. Kennedy, and contrary to all the history that they write about him, he was not a civil rights advocate.
That's correct.
He voted against the 1957 Civil Rights Act, and he called the Freedom Riders unpatriotic because they were distracting attention from the issues that he thought were important, which were the international crises in Cuba and the Soviet Union and Vietnam. The reason he made that phone call to help spring Dr. King was because his brother-in-law, Sergeant Shriver, had to beat up on him and get him to make that call. He was essentially indifferent. And I don't say that to declare that he's evil. He was a politician, and he had to do the calculation of what were the benefits of being fully engaged with the civil rights agenda versus the liabilities of maybe losing the Southern Democratic vote when he came up for re-election in 1964. But that phone call and that whole process led to the King family putting themselves squarely behind the Democrats. Finally, Barry Goldwater, who realized that his brand of conservatism, which talked more about individual liberty and federalism, which became states' rights, and that term in itself was an incendiary term to the black community, because to them, states' rights meant that the people in the South who were inflicting Jim Crow laws on the black community could continue to do that. And I always tell people, no, because the one thing that trumps states' rights are the rights of every American citizen to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And any state that was violating those rights was going to be affected by the federal government's intervention. I mean, to me, it's, again, people want to confuse the issues, but it's really not that hard. The ability of states to make decisions for themselves and not have the federal government intrude does not mean that they have the right to violate people's rights. Mm. So individual liberty ends when somebody's rights are infringed upon. And that's been a principle that's been in effect for a while. I'm working on a idea of a new book, which is called Words That Make Our Republic Work, or something to that effect,
mm-hmm.
because I think the words are so important, and so many people have distorted the words over time to mean something that they don't, kind of like Uncle Tom, which we can talk about in a bit. But they, I think they misunderstand the idea of states' rights or federalism. It's not giving states permission to suppress anyone. It's allowing states to be free from federal intervention. The whole idea is that problems are best solved closest to where the problems exist. That's why it starts with individuals, then the families, communities, houses of worship, charities, local government, state government. And basically, at every level, you do what you can do, and then when you can't do it, you go to the next level for help. What we have in our country is the federal government stepping in and wanting to be everything to everybody, and it just can't do it. It's impossible for it to do it. But
I agree.
Because of states' rights, Martin Luther King Jr. basically said, I can't vote for Barry Goldwater because I believe that his policies are harmful to the black community. And everybody went with the Kings, and like I said, that was the beginning of the end, as it were. And for all those people out there who say, yeah, and then all the racist Democrats left and became Republicans, there's no bigger lie out there than that. The Southern strategy, as people like to call it, was designed to appeal to the Southern voters in the, what they call the border states, including the Carolinas, Florida, Virginia, those areas. The Republicans wrote off the Deep South. And Richard Nixon told them that he wasn't going to change his position on the civil rights. I mean, why would a person institute a strategy that's based on racism while at the same time telling people that he fully supports civil rights? It was the Nixon administration that implemented affirmative action. It was the Nixon administration that insisted that all of the civil rights rules that were in place at the time were not only going to remain, but were going to be enforced. So the Southern strategy wasn't about race. And all of those people who say the racist Republicans joined, well, they really didn't have any choice but to go to the Republican Party simply because on other issues they cared about, the Democrats were so far off to the left, they had no other home. And we've made it quite clear to those racist Republicans that they don't have a place in our party either, unless they are willing to mend their ways.
It's funny you say, like, placing in the Republican Party, because it's – I'll say my first visit into, and just switching gears a little bit before we start talking about your book, it seems to me that, I'm trying to find a mild way to put this, but I guess I got to just keep it real. It seems to me that the Republican platform is boring. And I always, when I speak to people, I always say that, and I'm talking about in the senses of trying to get a hold of kids, you know, trying to entice kids. Or I'll say black kids to the party to understand what's for you. If you're not reading and there's no one to really explain what the truth is to you, how do we get a hold of these kids and show them that, hey, it's not all about fun and games, and it's really not fun and games, but how can we bring some of those kids inside and show them what the party really represents? And also two-part question, how can the Republicans lighten up a little bit? How can we start having a little bit of fun?
Well, I don't blame you for either of those things. The problem is that the Republican Party by its very nature is not a risk-taking party. I can't tell you how many times, whether it was when I was with the Bush administration or when I ran for office, the Republicans go through these periods of time where they're all excited about the possibility of reaching out to different communities and making them part of the party and all of that.
Right.
And just as soon as they get excited about it, then it just goes away again. You know, they don't seem to understand what it takes to become engaged with these different communities. And they want to use the same approach with everybody. And they believe that their ideas, that their platform, if you will, is sufficient, because they're all about they're about substance, and I like that about the Republican Party. You know, they're going
right.
they're going to show substance in what they believe. You know, they can trace Republican ideals all the way back to Aristotle, the great Greek philosopher, and all of these other great things. But I'm imagining if you're a young kid and you're hearing all this, you're going, oh, help.
Exactly. You know, the kids don't, they hear us talking about stuff like this, man, and they're ready to leave. You know, they're ready to get away from us. So I'm thinking, you know, I think one thing that has to be done is we have to apply the truth principles to what they're doing today. You know, maybe to their music, maybe to the style of clothes or the genre they like. You know, I don't know.
No, you know what? You are absolutely right. You know, one of the things I always tell my Republican friends whenever they want to go into what I call a non-traditional constituency, and they're all talking about, well, why do we have to do it this way? Why do we have to appeal to this or that? Aren't we all Americans? Can't we all just get along? And I say, you know what? That is a wonderful goal. That is where I try to live my life that way on a day-to-day basis with everybody I come into contact with. It is where we want to be. But if you're going to reach somebody that's not with you now, you have to go to where they are. You have to understand what it is that appeals to them, what it is that touches their hearts, because you're not going to get them to listen to your substance until you capture their hearts. And that is one of those things where you've got to understand that you can't go in there with this race-neutral, colorblind approach because you won't get your foot in the door. And I understand that that's hard and that goes against a lot of the beliefs that people have about how we are supposed to be as a country, how we're supposed to be as Christians. You know, there's no black or white in the eyes
Amen.
Of Christ. We know that. And believe me, I've been around all of the people in the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and there's no doubt in my mind that in the way they live their personal lives on a day-to-day basis, race doesn't matter. But they also know that for the people that they have to try and appeal, race does matter.
Sure.
And so you have to figure out what it is that will help you deliver that message, and that includes culture. You know, Republicans have got to figure out how to use culture, popular culture, music, movies, other things to try and get their message out there. And that doesn't just apply to the black community. That applies to everyone. You know, that's how, you know, again, we got to, taking back the megaphone doesn't just mean sticking on talk radio. I mean, talk radio is great, because you can go into great depth on issues. You can get into the meat of things. And I love talk radio for that reason. But
Absolutely.
How many people out there who you're trying to persuade are listening to talk radio? But they're watching TV. They're going to the movies. They're listening to music. Those are areas where we have to start making some inroads. And I think that it's important, again, be where they are. Don't be proud or timid or selfish and say they have to come to where you are. You're the one that wants to make the inroads. You're the one that wants to build the bridges. So go to where they are and start thinking about how it is that, you know, the Democrats, you know, they may have a horrible philosophical base, but they sure do know how to reach people emotionally. They figured that out.
Yeah, that seems to be the only way they're reaching people today. I'll say that. Listen,
yeah,
I'm going to go to a break, and then I want to come back to a caller. But before we go to the break, let me ask you this right here, and I'll let you go as deep as you want. But here's an argument that I always hear, like when I'm talking to just people from anywhere that aren't Republicans or that aren't anything, unaffiliated, and they always say, Republicans are all about the money. They just want the rich to get richer and the poor to get poor. What would your response be to that right before the break?
My response would be, have you ever looked to see who Wall Street gives more money to? Have you ever looked to see who are the millionaires in Congress? Did you know that 22 of the 30 richest districts in the United States are represented by Democrats?
Tell them again.
I mean, Wall Street gives more money to Democrats than Republicans.
Is that a fact?
That's a fact. 16 of the top 20 millionaires in Congress are Democrats. So let's not be hypocrites here. You know, the Democrats don't mind you making your money if you're an entertainer or an athlete, but somehow if you work hard for it in the business world, you're unworthy of it, and that's bull. I mean, I've been in the business world. I work hard. and I believed that anything I made in the business world, I deserved it. And I know they like to find the occasional scandal out there, but I would say the overwhelming number of business people not only earned their money and worked hard for it, if you look at their backgrounds, you'll find out that they all came from backgrounds that were either poor or working class, and they worked their way up. In fact, there's a great book out there called The Millionaire Next Door, and you will find that a lot of the people who were successful in business and who made millions were people who came from modest backgrounds. That's the American dream. The idea that we all have to reach this level of mediocrity where we all have the same thing, that's not America. America is believing that no matter where you are, there is no limit to where you can go.
Mm.
I mean, look at Herman Cain, who's running for the presidency right now. His father worked three jobs, and his mother worked as a domestic cleaning white people's houses so that he and his brother could go to college. He became a successful corporate executive. He turned around a Burger King franchise. He took Godfather's Pizza, went from bankruptcy to profitability in 14 months, put together a management team, bought Godfather's, and ran it. And they're calling this man all kinds of names. He is what we all want to be.
That's right.
We
man.
Want to be able to believe we can rise from poverty to success. We want to go from the pit to the penthouse. And so it's really ridiculous for people to start talking about money and Republicans and all that, because we all aspire to reach the heights of our potential as human beings. That is more moral than saying that some of us don't deserve what it is that we've earned. That's what I would tell people who say the Republicans are all about the rich. I want to be rich. I'm not there yet, not even close. But at least I know in this country that the potential is there for me to do that if I work hard and I play by the rules.
Woo, man, people, you got me excited in here on that one, boy. You don't know. I'm standing out of my seat, Ron. Let's go to a commercial, baby. We got to pay a couple bills from these sponsors here. We'll come right back. We're going to get a call on the line, and we'll let the caller talk to us and see what they think about the show. WMMG, home of the KLRP radio show. You're listening to Pudgy. I got a guest host in here. I'm sorry, guest speaker in here, Ronnie Miller, author of the book Sellout, Musings of Uncle Tom's Porch. If you're online, hit us up, www.klrpradioshow.com. If you're on Facebook, it's facebook.com/KLRP Radio Show. And if you want to hit us up online, it's 619-638-8559. You're listening to the KLRP Radio Show. You're listening to WMMG, home of the KLRP Radio Show, baby. We are now 100,000 listeners strong, and it's all because of you. If you want more information about KIRP Radio Show, hit us up online. You can visit the website at www.kirpradioshow.com. Again, that's www.kirpradioshow.com. And if you're logging online and you're on some social sites, make sure you hit us up and like our page on Facebook. That's facebook.com/KIRP Radio Show. Add yourself to the page. You can leave a comment. You can talk about the topics, and we'll try our best to get them all and read them off on the show. And if you're also on Twitter, send us a tweet @KIRP Radio Show, or you can hit up the host, and that's me, that's Pudgy, @NC Pudgy. Like I said, we are now over 100,000 listeners strong, and it's all because of you, baby. We started out November 28th, 2010, and now we're taking it through 2011 and beyond. We are the KIRP Radio Show, and if you don't know what that stands for, that's keeping it real with Pudgy, baby. If you want more information about emailing, or you want information about advertising, or you want to know where we're going to be here and there, hit us up, KIRPradio@gmail.com or WMMG500@gmail.com, and someone will get back to you as soon as possible. Like I said, it's all because of you, baby. 100,000 listeners strong, and we're going on from here. I appreciate you, and one love.
Hey, if it's Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. and you got nothing to do, I want you to make some time. Grab your slippers, get your robe on, get some comfortable clothes on, leave your rollers in your hair, and get cozy, real cozy, with a drink and your computer. If you've ever been to a coffee shop before, this is a coffee shop you've never seen before, right in the comfort of your own home. Late Night Mike, every Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m., starring your host, Katrina Watkins, poet extraordinaire, and the host Act Right, my man holds it down, the purely poetic Late Night Mike poetry show. Hey, if you wanted some good poetry in your life, make sure you log on to www.blogtalkradio.com/purely-poetic.
Do you have a garage full of old junk? At least you think it's old junk. How about a storage that you've been paying the bill on for so long and you've just been moving stuff into and you're ready to get rid of it when you look at it all the time? Well, if you do, make sure you contact Faulkner's Antiques before you throw it away. Again, that's Faulkner's Antiques out of Burlington, North Carolina. Faulkner's will pay you top dollar for estates, sterling, old furniture, pottery, signs, old toys, and etc. Faulkner's Antiques, they specialize in some of the most prolific antiques in this part of Eastern North Carolina or the USA. So make sure you contact Wayne Prophet at Faulkner's Antiques, 336-214-6427. Again, that's Wayne Prophet. That's the man you want to talk to at Faulkner's Antiques, 336-214-6427. And if you get a hold of Wayne, guess what? He'll come to you free of charge. And if you can't get to him at that number, make sure you dial this other number, 336-675-4897. And don't forget, Wayne Prophet at Faulkner's Antiques says, don't forget the reason for the season. Heat messing up in this winter. Is the snow just getting on your last daggone nerves? Are you cold and you gotta put on a snuggie in the house? That's not comfortable. No, it's not comfortable. Are you a grown man wearing your wife's footies? Are they pink? Are you scared to go check your mailbox with your wife's footies on and as cold as it is inside as it is outside? Well, I'll tell you what you do. If you're looking for a friend, contact Riley Heating and Cooling. If your ductwork needs a facelift, Riley Heating and Cooling will facelift your ductwork. Are you getting the most for your dollar? If you're not, Riley Heating and Cooling will make sure you get the most for your dollar. Ask about their five-point inspection service. They have trained professionals that offers 25 years of experience. To contact Riley Heating and Cooling, call 336-263-5111. Again, that's 336-263-5111, and you'll find a friend at Riley Heating and Cooling. Have you ever been in a situation where you wanted to, I don't know, let's say you felt like you wanted to do something special, or maybe you felt empty in life. Maybe you got a lot of free time on your hands and you want to do something for your community. Maybe there's a lot of things going on. There are a lot of things going on in government today. But maybe there are some things that's going on that you feel so strongly about, or some things.
We're in warfare, and Jesus Christ is looking for warriors that are willing to fight.
We need to leverage our political power and our political interests in both parties. We have the opportunity to talk about how our values work, because when they're put in place, when we govern according to those values, they work.
If anybody is going to take on Mr. Barack Obama, it's going to be black conservatives.
When you push in abortion upon a population, you ask yourself, who's pushing it?
Democrats cannot win without the black vote.
The Jesse Jackson era is over.
Conservatism is neither white nor black. It's what's right. It's what's good.
Our community is everyone.
This is a Kingdom of God movement.
When I was in inner city, pastoring, what I saw was the Democratic Party making the inner city at that time a social wasteland.
Maybe it's you who needs to decide that you want something different and stop waiting for a politician to hand that to you.
We are serious about the mission that we have for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and we stand on three basic pillars, and we don't apologize for it, but we are devoted Christians, first and foremost. We are proud Black Americans and active Republicans. There are two issues that are facing our nation today that we don't allow anybody, if they want to get our support. You are pro-life, and you believe marriage is composed of one man and one woman at one time. We may not be the organization for you, and that's okay. We're not changing who we are.
I don't understand that. They won't mention that the vice chair. When I tell a lot of people this, even Republicans, they say, wow, we didn't know that. They didn't know that the vice chair of the North Carolina Republican Party is a Black man named Dr. Timothy Johnson. Timothy Johnson is also the national chairman and founder of the Frederick Douglass Foundation. They don't mention that the KKK was a terrorist arm of the Democratic Party. They just talk about what they did to Blacks, but they fail to mention, they forget that one little detail. And another thing they won't tell you is that from 1929 to 1974, North Carolina had a eugenics board, and they passed the Sterilization Act, which they forcibly sterilized 7,600 people, some of them as young as 8 years old. They don't mention that. Democrats were doing that.
WMMG, home of the KRRP radio show, and we are back live with my man, author, incredible man of the world, and Frederick Douglass Foundation president, from what I just hear, of the Maryland chapter of the Frederick Douglass Foundation, Ronald E. Miller. This man is something incredible, folks, and I'm glad you tuned in and listened to him. Everybody on here, you are B.I.G. in my book. Real quick, I just got to read over the weather report sponsored by, who's sponsoring the weather report this week? Oh, once again, it's SoundChew.com, the American idol of the internet. SoundChew.com is the place you want to go if you feel like you can sing, if you feel like you can rap, maybe you do some poetry. If you feel like you have what it takes to make it in the music industry today, SoundChew.com is where you want to be. You log on, you register. Someone from SoundChew will get with you, and they'll let you know what you have to do to go through the progress of starting your way to being the next big entertainer of the world. In Washington right now, our constituents up there, 53 degrees right now, 47 late tonight, 82 degrees and windy tomorrow, 56 degrees later tomorrow with the chance of rain, 90% chance of thunderstorms also. Los Angeles, 63 degrees right now, will be 53 degrees and cloudy later tonight, 75 degrees on tomorrow and sunny tomorrow night, 54 degrees and clear. I could use some of that weather in the North Carolina. I don't know about you. Going to Greensboro, speaking of the North Carolina, our home where we are right now, 63 degrees today. It was a beautiful day, folks. I mean, it was beautiful. It was a lovely day. I enjoyed every bit of this weather that we had, 63 degrees, 49 degrees right now tonight and later tonight. The temperature should drop to around 38 degrees overnight. Tomorrow, another day, folks. 86 degrees tomorrow in the G-Borough Triad area. So everybody, get your shorts out. Time to barbecue. Got to give a special shout-out to my son. Tomorrow is his 6th birthday. Happy birthday, Christian. We're going to do something special tomorrow, baby. Going to do something for you in school. And when you come home, Daddy and Mommy got something special for you. 55 degrees tomorrow night in the Greensboro area. We are on the air. WMMG, home of the KRRP radio show. If you're listening online, you can hit us up, 619-638-8559. Give us a call. Press 1. Maybe you got a question for Mr. Miller. Maybe you got a question for me, which I'm Mr. Miller. No relation to the magnificent Mr. Miller, but, you know, it is what it is. With two Mr. Millers on the air, something good got to be going on. And I don't know. If you want to hit us up online, you can hit us up on the Facebook if you can't get on the website, or, you know, maybe your PDA is not working right. But if you're Facebooking, Facebook.com/KRRP Radio Show. Look us up. Look up Mr. Miller, Ronald E. Miller. Look him up. He's a great, renowned author. The book that this man wrote, which I have not read yet, and I will order right now on the air, is a magnificent book. I had a chance to glance through it down in Washington at the Frederick Douglass Foundation Leadership Summit, where I met Mr. Miller, and I was very impressed with his breakout session on Uncle Tom. Let's take a call to Mr. Miller and see what we got. You ready?
I'm ready.
Got a caller from the 910. Well, I guess you're one of three callers. Last two numbers is 86, sir, since I'm not screening calls. Are you on? Hello? You on the air with Pudgy? Can't hear you. Try you back again. Let's go to another caller here. We get a caller out of the 217. Caller, you are on the air with Pudgy and Ronald E. Miller, author. You are breaking up some kind of bad. I can barely hear anything from your phone. You have to try back again. Let's go to another caller out of the 910. Caller, you're on the air, 27. Hello? Caller T-Bone, you're on the air with Ron and Pudgy. Okay, maybe nobody wants to talk, Ron. I don't know.
Was I that good?
Maybe they just don't want to talk, but it is what it is. But let's go into your book here, man, because from what I understand, this is a beautiful book. But before I ask you questions on your book and let you explain your book, what is an Uncle Tom?
Well, if you go by what people use it for today, in fact, recently Jalen Rose, the analyst with ESPN, who referred to the 1990s Duke basketball player, black basketball players as Uncle Toms, kind of added another layer to the meaning. But what it means is someone who is either aspiring to be white or is an apologist for white people. I usually use the term bootlicking apologist because it is, the way the term is used, they're describing somebody who's bowing and scraping at the behest of white people. So there's probably nothing more incendiary that a black person can use as a slur to call another black than to call him an Uncle Tom. Now, the problem I have with that is that it bears no resemblance whatsoever to the actual character Uncle Tom. And usually when somebody asks me or uses that term, I said, have you ever actually read Uncle Tom's Cabin? Do you know anything about Uncle Tom's Cabin by Harriet Beecher Stowe? In most cases, no, they haven't read it, nor do they care to, because they think they know what it's about. But in fact, they don't. Uncle Tom's Cabin was an anti-slavery novel written by a woman named Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Mm-hmm.
And it became one of the most successful novels of its time. And it became one of the most sociologically significant ones of its time because a lot of people believe that it's that novel that energized the abolitionist movement and led us to the Civil War. And in fact, there's a rumor, and it's never been substantiated, but the rumor is that when President Lincoln met Harriet Beecher Stowe, he said, so this is the little lady who started the big war. And she basically brought to the attention of the American public the horrors of slavery. And the central character, Uncle Tom, was a loyal character, loyal to his master, but loyal to the slaves as well. And he protected the slaves from cruelty, sometimes allowing himself to be subjected to cruelty rather than them have to go through it. And he was beaten to death by two black overseers, Sambo and Quimbo, because he refused to divulge the whereabouts of two black slaves that he'd helped to escape. Now, does this sound like somebody who's an apologist for white people? In fact, Harriet Beecher Stowe created this character to be almost an archetype of Jesus Christ, a person who was forgiving, a person who had grace even for those that hated him. In fact, even as he was beaten and eventually died from his wounds, he forgave the two black overseers that beat him, and they were so moved by his grace that they too became Christians.
Wow.
So of all the characters in the book, Uncle Tom was probably the most noble and the most Christ-like of all of the characters in the book. And the reason he became associated with this whole idea of, I guess, being a bootlicking apologist for white people, that all came about because the minstrel shows that were popular in those days were usually the way that a lot of people became acquainted with literature. In other words, if they didn't go out and buy the book, they actually would go to a show. It's, you know, it's like going to the movies or watching a television show about a book rather than actually reading the book. And so that was the most popular way for distributing information about a novel. And the minstrel shows didn't like portraying Uncle Tom as a superior character, if you will, to the others in the novel. And so they converted him into this happy-go-lucky, buffoonish, slapping character that we all think about when we think about the way they used to portray blacks. And it was the minstrel shows that basically turned Uncle Tom into the character that most people associate him with today. But in the original novel, he was nothing of the kind. In fact, there was a real-life inspiration for Uncle Tom, and folks who want to know a little bit about black history need to look up his name. His name is Josiah Henson. That's Josiah Henson, H-E-N-S-O-N. One of the exciting things about starting a Maryland chapter of the Frederick Douglass Foundation is that three of the great people of black history were slaves in Maryland. And
wow.
they launched from here. Frederick Douglass was a slave in Easton, Maryland. So
that's
was
true.
Harriet Tubman of the Underground mm-hmm. Railroad. And Josiah Henson was a slave in Maryland. And he was a person who his master counted on, depended on him. And he was loyal to his master because his master promised that once he raised enough money to buy his freedom, that he would set him free. He trusted his master. His master basically betrayed him.
Mm.
And eventually he realized he was never going to get his freedom, and he escaped. And he escaped to Canada, where he formed a community comprised of freed slaves. And that community grew to about 500 people, and he provided all kinds of help and services to these people. He never left Canada. Once he got there and established the community, he stayed there until he died. But he became a pastor and a man of great significance in Canada. In fact, he was the first black person to be on a Canadian postage stamp. So he was the inspiration for his autobiography was the inspiration that Harriet Beecher Stowe used to create Uncle Tom.
You know, that's enlightening. I mean, if you put that into – let's put that in, like, in perspective of today now. Just imagine this, because I didn't even know the part about Sambo and Quimbo. So, I mean, imagine Uncle Tom getting beat down by Sambo and Quimbo. According to how people relate who Uncle Sam is, I mean, wow, that's pretty amazing to me, you know. Jeez.
And what's funny about it, like you said, they use the term Sambo and the term Uncle Tom to mean the same thing.
Yeah.
When in fact Sambo beat Uncle Tom to death because Uncle Tom wouldn't divulge the whereabouts of these female slaves. So, yeah, it's really messed up. And, again, and this is something I always encourage people to do. There is so much out there about history, and I've been a history buff for almost all my life. But one thing I used to believe that history was pure because history happened. You know, there's no interpretation or anything. All you have to do is look at the history happened. And so, therefore, you can't really make anything out of it that it's not there. But I learned over the years, and part of this was my time as an intelligence officer and watching what countries like the Soviet Union used to do with history, I learned that history is written by the victors, whoever they might be. And they can write it however they choose, even if it didn't really happen. And so I always encourage people to take the time to go back to the source documents, to go back as far as they can to the original material and read it for themselves. Because if they do that, they're going to learn a lot that they're never going to hear if they rely on people who are trying to tell them the stories today. I mean, think about it. The Democrats have basically held the black vote almost uncontested for 50 years, let's say. Okay?
Yeah.
How does 50 years offset over 100 years of racial progress that was brought about by the Republican Party? It was the Republican Party that freed the slaves. It was the Republican Party that passed the amendments to the Constitution that guaranteed equal rights for blacks. It was the Republicans who passed every major civil rights legislation, every single constitutional amendment for civil rights from 1854 all the way to 1964. So how is it that the Democrats all of a sudden can take over a century of dedication by one party to the equality of all men under God and just wipe that out and suddenly make that party seem like it's on the outside, whereas the party that was actually inflicting the most harm for equal rights in America and came late and reluctantly to the party is suddenly the champion of civil rights. That's foolish.
Well, let's debate.
Do your homework.
I'm going to be the foolish one without doing the homework. Okay, so when you say that, I'm going to say to you, that was then, this is now. Now we're Democrats.
Well, let me tell you this. Do you honestly believe that a party that tells you that you're incapable of making it on your own and that you need their help to succeed is your friend?
Well, they give us social services and housing, and they spend money on housing and stuff that help us out and help us get free education.
And they're giving all of this to you out of the goodness of their heart. That free education they're giving you is keeping you in schools that are violent. It's keeping you in schools when you're not learning. And when you try to break out of those schools, look at how they react. I mean, the people who are arguing most passionately on the floor of the U.S. Congress to keep black children in D.C. out of better schools are black people. A little child was watching this debate, and, oh, I love the words of children. Sometimes they just cut right to the heart of the matter. She
yeah.
looked at one of the advocates for this voucher program in D.C., and she said, why don't the congressmen who look like us want us to go to better schools?
I can't debate no more because I feel like an idiot trying to debate that on for the other side, really, tell you the truth.
I mean, the bottom line is people who give you something, at least in the world that we live in, are doing it for a reason. There are very few people out there. I know that Christians strive to give without expectation, but political parties don't give without expectation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they're giving you these things because they recognize that as long as they can keep you in line, they remain in power. And political parties are about power. And you're not going to have a whole lot of power if you sold yourself out completely to one party because they give you things which really are things that are keeping you in line, whereas the other party doesn't believe they have any hope of winning you over, so they ignore you. What kind of power is that?
I have no idea.
The most power in that circumstance? I mean, in sports, if you are a free agent, both sides are going to be vying for your services. You've got different teams out there that are going to try and buy for your services if you're a valuable free agent. But if you decide right up front that you're going to be loyal to this team and you'll even take less money from this team because you're going to be loyal to them, the other teams will say, okay, we're going to move on. If you want to really influence politics, you need to be much more discerning, much more critical. You know what? I tell black people, I'm not trying to convert you on the spot to be a Republican. But what I am trying to do is to get you to think critically, think independently, and look more closely at what it is they're trying to do. I mean, if the education issue does not stir black hearts, if the fact that the abortion issue, which has a disproportionate impact on the black community, doesn't convince you that there's something wrong with a party that thinks the killing of children is okay, and most of those children that are being killed are black children, if they don't understand that, then I have no way to persuade them.
I'm going to go to a caller from the 910. I want you to
okay.
go ahead. See if we can get this caller back in. It looks like Todd, are you on the line, Todd?
I am on the line.
Hey, man, I appreciate you calling it and getting back with us here. You're on the air with Pudgy and Ron. I'll let you talk to either one of us. You know, go ahead. What were you saying?
I mean, the term Uncle Tom alone is just completely misused, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, gearing towards blacks, I mean, is that the majority of the people that it's directed to? I mean, we've got
that's a good question.
I mean, we've got just as many whites we should be calling Uncle Tom.
Have you ever heard
absolutely.
That term used towards a white man, Todd, before?
Never.
Well, there's a reason
for
that.
Why not, though?
Well, it depends.
I mean,
there's
plenty of Uncle Toms that are white. There's plenty of white Uncle Toms.
That's interesting. Because if you think about it, the term Uncle Tom is usually used to describe a black person who wants to be white or who is trying to appease white people. But I think what you're probably getting at. Now, are you thinking about whites who want to be black? Is that what you're thinking of?
Absolutely.
They have another term for those, believe it or not.
Well, I just think it's a bunch of hypocritical statements, personally, man.
No,
I mean,
you're absolutely right about that. You know, the fact of the matter is, if you look at the people, I think it reflects poorly on the people who use the term more than anything else.
Absolutely.
I mean, look at this incident with Jalen Rose. For those who don't know what that's all about, Jalen Rose used to play for the University of Michigan basketball team back in the early 90s. He played for a team, they called them the Fab Five, because they were considered to be the best recruiting class in basketball history at the time. And not only were they talented, they also brought the hip-hop culture to basketball. That's where the baggy shorts and the black shoes and socks and the trash talk and all that started, was with them. But their nemesis was Duke. Contrary to all the talk about their talent and everything else, they never won a national championship. They lost to Duke 1 year and to North Carolina the following year. And Jalen Rose had a lot of resentment for the Duke players, particularly the black players at Duke, because he wasn't recruited by Duke. And he believed that it's because he wasn't their type. As far as he was concerned, they were looking for people who were, in his view, Uncle Toms. Now, he made that statement recently because they did a documentary about the Fab Five on ESPN, and that's when he made the statement that when he was 18, he thought the black Duke players were Uncle Toms. And Grant Hill, who was one of those black Duke players at the time, still playing in the NBA for the Phoenix Suns, responded in the New York Times to that comment. Well, why did he think they were Uncle Toms? Well, it wasn't because he necessarily felt that they were apologists for white people, but he said that they had things that he did not have. He was raised as a single parent home. His mother struggled to raise him. His father, who was a professional basketball player himself, is someone he never knew. In fact, he didn't talk. He talked to him, but never actually met his dad before he died. And yet you have Grant Hill, whose father, Calvin Hill, was a graduate of Yale University. And those football fans out there might remember Calvin Hill was a running back for the Dallas Cowboys and the Washington Redskins. Yep. And then his mother graduated from Wellesley College. His father was a frat brother with George W. Bush, and his mother was a close associate of Hillary Clinton in college. So this was a suburban family. They're still together. They raised him in a fine neighborhood, went to good schools, all of those things. So to Jalen Rose, Grant Hill had all these advantages that he didn't have, and that made him an Uncle Tom.
Yeah, I mean,
think about how ridiculous that is, though.
I think that, honestly, and maybe I'm off the subject a little bit by saying this, but I really think that the racism we have in our country today is just a bunch of bull crap. I mean, this isn't a black or white world anymore, man. We should all appreciate the beauty of gray, for God's sakes.
No, that's right.
Yeah, thanks for that, man. No, that's very good. Thank you.
You feel me, don't you, Pudge?
Yeah, that's a quote. I got to steal that right there. That's a quote right there.
That's TP right there, big boy.
T-Bone, I thought it was you when he said Todd. I wasn't sure because I'm not doing the Facebook tonight. But, hey, man, how you been, man? How's everybody?
Good, man, good. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm lovely. I'll see you in June, though. You know that, at the convention down there.
Look, buddy, I can't wait to see you.
We're going to fish off your back porch.
Hey, man. you know I got plenty of room, my friend.
Hey, check this out, Todd. Let me ask you a question, man, because I know you, and I know you well. When's the time that you felt awkward race-wise, like growing up maybe, and what was the outcome of that?
You know, it's funny you're going to say that you asked that, because you were there, man. I mean, back on track program.
Yeah.
Toys Not Middle School.
Right.
I mean, you know, I think me and Big Dwayne Whitley were the only two white guys in there. But, yeah, it was a little awkward at first, man. But I mean, we were all down, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
You got over it. You know, we all took care of each other, man. I mean,
sure.
Yeah, it was a little awkward at first, man, but, I mean, hell, we all got, you know, we were all brothers at the end of the day, man.
Right.
I didn't really experience, much racism. I mean, being not even 100% American, for Christ's sakes. I mean, I'm Greek-American.
That's right.
You know, branching off the subject a little bit, I mean, you could only imagine for someone like my old man who was coming, you know, who was back in the, you know, older days. I mean, you want to talk about experiencing racism, man. I mean,
wow.
Good God. I mean, hell, my mom and her side of the family is straight country, and she's marrying a Greek guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you want to talk about racism, man. I mean, he won't even accept it like the first 10 years that they were married.
Wow.
You know, I just think racism, man, is just, it's a term that people need to forget because, I mean, we're in the 2000s, man.
Yeah.
I mean, how long has it been now that, since segregation, how long has that been? How many years has that been? And we're still fighting racism? Come on, people.
Well, you know, it's like I tell people, this is
1955. Wake up and smell the bigger picture here.
Right.
Like I said earlier, we should all, this isn't a black and white world anymore, guys. And I'm going to end it with this. We should all appreciate the beauty of gray.
Hey, man. Hey, Todd, I appreciate your call, man. And, hey, keep listening in, man. What's your favorite station, baby?
Keeping it real with Pudgy, big boy.
My man, I'm going to holler at you later, brother.
All right, man. You holler at me.
All right, take care. Ron, what do you think about that? I mean, that's a man 30-something, early 30s, a Greek-American who says, you know, enough is enough. And
hey,
meanwhile,
you know what?
Yeah.
You're seeing that a lot. I you remember I talked about the NAACP and their
Absolutely.
Increasing irrelevance?
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons they've become increasingly irrelevant is because the Democratic Party, in my view, basically recruited them to be the water carriers for this whole Tea Party as racist men that they had out there. And they used it so often and so frequently that I think eventually people started thinking about this and saying, well, wait a minute. I know who I am in my heart, and I'm not a racist.
Mm-hmm.
How dare they? You know, they started pushing back. I think for a long time, people could count on the well-meaning hearts of people. Nobody wants – I don't think good people want to be racist in any way, shape, or form. And if somebody says that they're racist, then – it's going to affect them. They're going to be really influenced by that comment. Guilt, want to call it that? Maybe. But over time, people start to realize, now, wait a minute. This isn't about me. What they're saying doesn't apply to me. There are people out there who have never inflicted harm upon another person of another race. They've always been friendly. They've always been open. They've always opened their homes and their hearts. And so they're saying, this isn't me. And I know a lot of people in the Tea Party movement because I meet a lot of them here in Maryland. I'm active in that movement. And these are my neighbors. These are people I go to church with. These are people I go to Walmart with. These are people that I go to soccer games with. My kids are playing alongside their kids. And they're sitting there listening to this accusation and they're getting angry about it. There's no more of this hand-wringing that there used to be years and years ago when they felt like they probably owed something because of all of the history. You know, I always tell people that anyone who thinks that you can pay back even one bit of wrong that's been done in the past, number one, it reminds me of the deal that God made with us through Christ. God said, I don't care what you do. There's no way you can repay the evil that you've done. You know, I am holy. There's no way you're ever going to be as holy as me. So I'm going to give you an intercessor. I'm going to give you somebody that's going to stand alongside you. And if you accept him as your Lord and Savior, and if you stand by him, and if you believe him and you obey him, then that's just as good as if you were him. Okay? So the only way that God has given us to overcome what we've done in the past is forgiveness and grace.
That's right.
And that's the only thing that's going to get us past this. Because if we're constantly resentful, constantly bitter, I mean, how many people are still gaining negative energy from what happened in 1955? You know, one of the things that really bothers me about Black History Month and what it's turned into, when it was first established, the idea behind it was to give black people pride in what they had contributed to the growth and expansion of America, to show that they were as much a part of it as anyone, and to show the great black leaders who overcame tremendous adversity to be great successes. Now it's turned into a black pity party and a white guilt party. You know, they go there to, oh, look at how badly they treated the black people. Oh, we have to do something about it. Well, you can't go back and change the past. You've got to deal with the here and now. And you have to acknowledge that things are better now than they were back then. They're better now than they were in 1955. They're better now than they were in 1964. The people who are struggling right now in the black community are people who are being told that it isn't better. And they believe it. And I think it's a crime that any black leader would deny the legacy and the heritage of great people like Frederick Douglass, who overcame a heck of a lot more than any of us had to deal with. And this was a man that was literally in chains. This is a man who was literally beaten. This is a man who literally had to serve at the feet of a white master, who escaped and had to work menial jobs to survive. But he became one of the greatest orators and writers and statesmen of our time. He was so great, in fact, that a lot of people didn't believe he used to be a slave, and he had no formal education. Yet this is the man who we honor today as being one of the great Americans of all time. And I look at his life and the life of so many others in black history, and I said, for shame, if I can't, with all of the advantages I have in today's society, if I can't get over, you know, there's racism out there. Let's be real. But is it an obstacle? Racism used to be a wall that we couldn't climb. And then people started chipping away at it. People like Frederick Douglass, like Harriet Tubman, like George Washington Carver, like Biddy Mason, and all the names are endless. It's not a wall anymore. It's a speed bump. And if people are going to be hypersensitive about being called names or hypersensitive because they can't get their freak on and do the things they want to do and still expect to succeed in society, you know, society, the rules for success in society apply to everybody, regardless of race, religion, color, creed, ethnicity, or whatever you have. Stay in school, get your diploma, get and keep a job, marry, and have kids, all in that order, and you're four times less likely to be poor. Does anything of that, any of that have to do with race? Does any of that have to do with government finding the path, the solution for you? No.
No.
Those are all personal decisions.
That's right. How can we evolve into? I mean, right now today, with the decrease in marriage and the influx of diseases, STDs, I'll say, and the influx of I don't care, the influx, the dropout rate is increasing in every community. Not just the black community, in every single community, according to statistics. So, like, how can we evolve into something new today and in the future? I mean, where do we go from here, Ron, if you had all the money in the world? And the question would be, you know, how do we fix this? How do we fix it?
Well, my heart breaks for the people that have already been inflicted with this so-called education system we have because it's failed them. And I'm afraid that those are people that are going to struggle because of it, and we need to be there to help them if we can. But going forward, the number one thing I think we need to do, number one, we need to encourage alternatives in education. And we don't need a lot of money to do it. You know, I look at all of the different things that are happening out there with charter schools, voucher programs, and other things, and one of the astounding things is they're able to do a better job of educating our children and preparing them for their future than a lot of school districts are getting a lot more money and getting a lot worse results. It's not about the money. It's how you do it. There's a great story on ABC News a couple of weeks ago about a school in Cincinnati, Ohio. I believe it was Robert Taft High School, if I remember correctly. And that school, 10 years ago, was a hellhole. 18% graduation rate, violence, armed guards, metal detectors, and all the other things. Everything you could possibly imagine about a school that you would see in an inner city like that. Well, guess what? This year they're graduating 95% of their students, and all of their graduates are going to college. So what was the difference? You had a man, a principal, come in there and basically not subscribe to the notion that they can't do it. He said, not only can you do it, you will do it. Because I know you can, and I'm not going to accept anything less than your best. And then he found teachers who believed it and were willing to work with these kids. And then they found people in the community, Cincinnati Bell. The CEO was so impressed that he stepped in and said, not only am I going to allow my employees to tutor kids and actually charge work hours to that tutoring time, I'm going to give any kid who makes a certain grade point average a laptop and a cell phone. But guess what? If your grades fall, I take it back.
Mm-hmm.
So basically they put incentives out there, they raised expectations, and this is a public school. So if they can do it at a public school that went from 18% to 95% graduation rate, and yes, it is a predominantly black school, they're now moving into a brand new facility, which is going to have all the great amenities, and it's because people did not accept less of themselves. You know, it's amazing to me that the power for us to change is within ourselves if we just quit telling ourselves and quit letting other people tell us that we can't do it. And that's what government says when they say that they need to intervene. The whole equality argument for equality of outcome is that somehow the world owes us this. The world doesn't owe us anything. All we can do in the world is do our very best. And if we do our very best, we know that we're going to have our ups and downs. I've had ups and downs. I'm not going to say that because I believe what I believe, I've become filthy rich.
Right.
But I've become rich in the relationships I've built with people all across the spectrum. I've become rich in terms of how my life has played itself out. Because I don't go into life thinking that anybody owes me anything, and I go into life looking for opportunities to help people who are trying hard to make it. Because I honestly believe that America is a country where if you're trying hard, yeah, you're going to have your times when you fall, but I honestly believe that there are people there that are not only going to cheer you on, but they're also going to be there to lend you a helping hand.
Wow.
So it's really, it's a lot about, it's so much of it is about the man and the woman in the mirror. It's not accepting less of yourself.
Go ahead, please. That's something that I stand on is self-responsibility. And you know, hey, man, I've had a rough life too. You know what I mean? But at the same time, and I'm not wealthy by any man's terms, but you know, I feel like I'm more than wealthy, like you said, by the relationships that I've built and just being able to get off my butt, man, and make something happen for myself. And we all in America have that ability to do that. Like, for example, last night I was talking to a friend of mine. Actually, he's still in the military now. And, you know, he was saying, you know, in Afghanistan, it's amazing. You know, this is his third time going and coming back, and one time he got they got attacked by IED, and his truck got hit. So you know he got injured, came home, went back, and now he's on his third term and is about to retire in a few years. But anyway, you know, talking to him last night, he was saying that it you know, he asked me a question. He said, "Hey, do you know what the main thing the kids in Afghanistan ask for when they run up to us? Do you know what they want the most?" And I'm thinking, he said, out of all the things in the world, out of all the necessities that they needed, what's something that they would ask for? And I'm thinking, you know, I don't know, you know, food, clothes,
yep,
water,
candy,
you know, something. He said, you know, a piece of paper and a pen. And I'm going, what do you mean a piece of paper and a pen? He says, well, they go to school with nothing. They have absolutely nothing. and the villages that they were in, or the cities that they were in, or the places that they were in, the kids would run up to them asking for a pen and paper so they could write. And, man, I found that amazing. I'm like, you know, I never would have thought that in a million years that a pen and a paper would be so important to someone. And here we are in America where we have the ability to create a website online and sell a product that we don't even build or house and become a millionaire, frankly. It's happened time after time again. But, you know, what we're dealing with here and what we're fighting against is people who want to sit on their ass and they don't want to do anything. And those are the type of people who need to, in my opinion, they need to be working for maybe the city or maybe the state. You know, I don't know. If you sit on your butt and you collect money, you shouldn't have to go out and make some kind of labor, you know, for that money. So I don't know what the answer is, but I think self-responsibility is the number one solution to all of our problems in America, from the bottom to the spectrum to the top of the spectrum, you know. Let's get into your book, man. And I know you probably got to go here. I've had you long enough, but asking you more about your book. When you wrote this book, you know, was there ever a time you felt like you would be criticized by maybe your family or your friends because of what you wrote in the book?
I was worried about that, and not so much because I didn't have the confidence in what I was writing. But I'm not somebody who goes out there with the intent of making people angry. If it's the truth and they become angry, so be it. I'm always going to stand by the truth. But there are certain people, like my mother, mm-hmm. that I thought about. And I said, you know, I gave her an advance copy. Don't want to mess with mom. And I'll confess that I did make a few changes. Nothing that would take away from the story, but she wanted to be sure that I was honoring our family in spite of whatever differences we may have had. And I'll be honest with you. I don't have the struggles that I know some black conservatives have described about their relationships with their families. I have always been surrounded by a lot of love and affirmation in my family. And the fact that I'm a conservative is a novelty to them. And they always tease me about it. But the fact is they're very proud of me. And they very much love me, and I've never had that sense of being ostracized or somehow closed out because of that choice. And I know there are some out there that have had that experience, so I consider myself blessed in that regard. I'm not really worried about criticism from people that I don't really know. You know, I always tell people, first of all, I don't know them and they don't know me. So therefore, their criticisms really don't have a whole lot of foundation. And secondly, I'm only really playing for an audience of one. Oh. And if I'm being true to my values, true to Christ, then I have the confidence and courage of what I'm saying, and that's really what makes me free. You know, when he says that you shall know the truth and the truth will set you free, I never really understood that for sure until I wrote this book and realized that if I have the confidence that what I'm saying is true, then there's nothing that will shake me.
Wow. That's monumental right there. You know, when a man is inspired to do something, nothing should stop him from doing it, you know, especially when it's for right. So I commend you on that. But that was a good move giving your mom an advance copy because, you know, Thanksgiving, man, you don't want them problems at Thanksgiving, brother.
Mm-mm. Well, she loved the final product. She, in fact, I remember sending her a copy with great trepidation, and finally it called, and I said, "Mom, what did you think?" She said, "It's wonderful, baby." She said, "It's how did she put it?" She said, "It's heartfelt and it's true." I said, "Oh, thank you, Mom."
Yeah,
I said,
right.
Thank you, God.
You got the seal of approval, baby. Don't matter what nobody else say now. Everybody else can get it.
That's right.
Hey, how can we get before I ask you how we can get a copy of the book, if you had to sum the book up in simple man's terms, and you know, you're standing in front of an audience and we're asking you, okay, what's going to make us buy your book? Why should we buy your book? Tell the audience, please.
You should buy it because it tells a different side of the story of what it means to be black in America. and it tells it from a very personal level. We're not caricatures. We're not evil people. We're human beings, and this is a human story about a person who came to a different conclusion than everyone else and who's living a life of great grace because of that conclusion. And I would tell people that whether they agree with it or disagree with it, it's authentic.
Mm. Got me so. How can we get a copy of it?
Well, I would point you to my website, teamronmiller.com. And you'll see on that website there's a couple of links to the book. One actually says the book.
Mm-hmm.
You click on that, and every ordering option that currently exists for the book is on that page, whether it's ordering from Amazon.com, whether it's Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. There's even an option where you can order a copy directly from me, and I will sign it with whatever inscription you desire and send it to you. So go to TeamRonMiller.com. And click on the book, and you'll have all the ordering options there. And just in case this radio show hasn't told you enough about the book, there's some information there about me, and you'll see a list of different topics that I cover in the book. There's even some pretty humorous topics in there about interracial dating and marriage, the black community's defense of scoundrels, talking about O.J. Simpson and Michael Vick. There's a part in there about talking about Tiger Woods and his problems. So I think the biggest compliment I've received for this book from people who have read it is that they didn't want to put it down. And so that means I created something that's ultimately very readable, and I'm very, very pleased with that.
It's definitely very real. I'm glad I had the opportunity to listen to you break that down to me here and in Washington. And I was sold in. I was supposed to get a book then, but I got pulled away during your breakout a few times. But I will make sure I get a copy tonight. TeamRonMiller.com and RegularFolksUnited.com. Tell us a little bit about that. What's that about?
Regular Folks United is an organization that was created back in 2008. And Lori Roman is the founder, and I've been pleased to work with her for this whole period. She believed that everyday Americans, regardless of their race, were lacking a place to go where they could express their opinions, where they could put news and information that they could share with one another without the filter of the liberal media out there. And so she created this site. You can go there. You can write your own op-eds. We don't have some editor process. We do go back and look after people have posted things to make sure that everything's cool. But for the most part, you type up your op-ed, you click on a button, and there it is. You can share the link with your friends. You can become your own pundit, create your own blog there, and you can share links. You can share YouTube videos and other information. And the whole concept is to create a pulpit for regular folks, as we call them.
Right.
And I've been the president of that organization, and I do a lot of my writing there. You'll see my smiling face on the left-hand side. And I think that it's a great site, and it's free. You can't beat the price.
You can't beat free, baby.
Yep. So I encourage people to go out there and sign up and start writing their own op-eds.
Hey, I just got a couple of things I want to do before you go. I want to play it's a little game that I normally do where I say a few names or something, or I'll mention a term, and I'll ask you what you think about it in 10 words or less, or just in one sentence if you could sum it up.
Okay.
I usually say one word, but it's going to be a little bit more complicated this time.
Okay.
Also, shout out to Poochie Hammonds. He's doing the he's backstage right now at the Mike Epps event. So shout out to Poochie Hammonds, everybody. If you you got nothing to do, you head over there to, I don't know where it is, somewhere in Eastern North Carolina. Mike Epps shows live, so go over there and check it out. If you're just listening in or you're just tuning in, I'm on the line with Ronald E. Miller, author and humanitarian at best. Captain, gotta throw that in there. You know, you fall for the country, so Captain Ronald E. Miller, and the author of, Sellout, Musings from Uncle Tom's Porch, and I hope I got that title exactly right that time, but
you did.
It's pretty close. You can get this book at TeamRonMiller.com or RegularFolksUnited.com. I'm sure you know how to spell it. I'll say it again, TeamRonMiller.com, RegularFolksUnited.com. is where you can get the book from, pardon me. If you're just listening in, call in 619-638-8559. Hit the 1 if you want to talk to Ron Miller before he goes. Also, you can log on to www.kirpradioshow.com. Again, that is kirpradioshow.com. And if you call in, you'll be real B.I.G. in my book. Hit us up on the Facebook if you got questions, and we'll be on an hour after the show is over to answer your questions or to comment or whatever you want to say. And if I can't answer it, I will happily forward it to Mr. Miller. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/KRRP Radio Show and search Ron E. Miller, author, on Facebook, and you can find his Facebook page and also buy his book. We got to get the book. If he took the time to talk to us tonight, we have to get the book, folks. There's some good info in there. It's going to tell you who Uncle Tom was, and, you know, it's going to give a different perspective about life from the black side of things and what Uncle Tom really means. So, you ready for your game?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Willie Lynch letter.
Bad move.
Barack Obama in 2031.
Ooh. Remembered as our first black president.
George Bush Jr. at Hurricane Katrina.
Misinformed.
Mm. I like that. That's a good move. April 4th, 1968, 6:01 p.m., Martin Luther King Jr.
My first awareness of the civil rights movement.
And last but not least, Jesus Christ walking in 2011 on the streets of New York.
Still Lord and Savior.
On the air with Ron E. Miller, answered every question with better than what I could have. I try to answer the questions myself, man, and you did me in, so I really commend you on that. With no heads up, I might add, too. Ron, is there any shout-outs you want to go or anything that you want to say to the listeners, man? We're over 100,000 listeners right now, 126 last I checked. And there are a lot of people that listen to the show on archives. There are a lot of people who listen live, and they just won't comment, and I understand that. That's cool. Is there anything you want to say to the listeners or anything you need to say in general before you go?
Well, I just encourage you to visit TeamRonMiller.com and visit RegularFolksUnited.com and read what I've written. And I encourage you to buy the book because not only will it affirm a lot of the things that you'll read out there, I honestly believe that this is a message that's going to take hold. It's a message that is ascending in America right now. And you look at the number of organizations like the Frederick Douglass Foundation, you look at gentlemen like Pudgy who are out there. I mean, it takes courage to be a black conservative and to stick your neck out there when everybody else wants to chop it off because you're going against the grain. But this is something that I think is unstoppable, and I want everyone to be a part of it.
Wow. I just got a message here, too, from Kevin Daniels, North Carolina, president of the Frederick Douglass Foundation. He said he'll be looking for you on the prayer call in the morning. Make sure you're on the FDF prayer call in the morning.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8 a.m. I'm there.
Ron, I appreciate you. Any shout-outs before you go, sir?
Nope. I appreciate all of this time. It's been a great conversation, and I've had a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Hey, man, I really appreciate you calling, and anything that we can do for you, anything that I can do for you, you have my info, you got my number. Hey, man, just reach out anytime. So if you're ever in North Carolina, you need something, ride from the airport, whatever. Just reach out and we got you.
All right. That sounds great. God bless you, man.
All right, thanks for the call. That was Ron E. Miller. I'm sure I'll get some phone calls, and he dropped some jewels on some of y'all heads, and I know y'all won't like it, but it is what it is. I'm sure you'll be sending me texts and Twitter mail and this, that, and the third. We're going to go to a commercial right before we close out the show. You're listening to the KIRP Radio Show.
Is your heat messing up in this winter? Is the snow just getting on your last daggone nerves? Are you cold and you gotta put on a snuggie in the house? That's not comfortable. No, it's not comfortable. Are you a grown man wearing your wife's footies? Are they pink? You scared to go check your mailbox with your wife's footies on and as cold as it is inside as it is outside? Well, I'll tell you what you do. If you're looking for a friend, contact Riley Heating and Cooling. If your ductwork needs a facelift, Riley Heating and Cooling will facelift your ductwork. Are you getting the most for your dollar? If you're not, Riley Heating and Cooling will make sure you get the most for your dollar. Ask about their five-point inspection service. They have trained professionals that offers 25 years of experience. To contact Riley Heating and Cooling, call 336-263-5111. Again, that's 336-263-5111, and you'll find a friend at Riley Heating and Cooling.
We're in warfare, and Jesus Christ is looking for warriors that are willing to fight.
We need to leverage our political power and our political interests in both parties. We have the opportunity to talk about how our values work, because when they're put in place, when we govern according to those values, they work.
If anybody is going to take on Mr. Barack Obama, it's going to be black conservatives.
When you push in abortion upon a population, you ask yourself, who's pushing it?
Democrats cannot win without the black vote.
The Jesse Jackson era is over.
Conservatism is neither white nor black. It's what's right. It's what's good.
Our community is everyone.
This is a Kingdom of God movement.
When I was in inner city pastoring, what I saw was the Democratic Party making the inner city at that time a social wasteland.
Maybe it's you who needs to decide that you want something different and stop waiting for a politician to hand that to you.
We are serious about the mission that we have for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and we stand on three basic pillars, and we don't apologize for it, but we are devoted Christians, first and foremost. We are proud black Americans and active Republicans. There are two issues that are facing our nation today that we don't allow anybody, if they want to get our support. You are pro-life and you believe marriage is composed of one man and one woman at one time. We may not be the organization for you, and that's okay. We're not changing who we are.
I don't understand that. They won't mention that the vice chair. When I tell a lot of people this, even Republicans, they say, wow, we didn't know that. They didn't know that the vice chair of the North Carolina Republican Party is a black man named Dr. Timothy Johnson. Timothy Johnson is also the national chairman and founder of the Frederick Douglass Foundation. They don't mention that the KKK was a terrorist arm of the Democratic Party. They just talk about what they did to blacks, but they fail to mention, they forget that one little detail. And the other thing they won't tell you is that from 1929 to 1974, North Carolina had a eugenics board, and they passed the Sterilization Act, which they forcibly sterilized 7,600 people, some of them as young as 8 years old. They don't mention that. Democrats were doing that.
You're listening to WMMG, home of the KIRP radio show, baby. We are now 100,000 listeners strong, and it's all because of you. If you want more information about KIRP radio show, hit us up online. You can visit the website at www.kirpradioshow.com. Again, that's www.kirpradioshow.com. If you're logging online and you're on some social sites, make sure you hit us up and like our page on Facebook. That's facebook.com/KIRP Radio Show. Add yourself to the page. You can leave a comment. You can talk about the topics, and we'll try our best to get them all and read them off on the show. And if you're also on Twitter, send us a tweet
at symbol KIRP Radio Show. Or you can hit up the host, and that's me, that's Pudgy, at symbol NC Pudgy. Like I said, we are now over 100,000 listeners strong, and it's all because of you, baby. We started out November 28th, 2010, and now we're taking it through 2011 and beyond. We are the KIRP Radio Show. And if you don't know what that stands for, that's keeping it real with Pudgy, baby. If you want more information about emailing, or you want information about advertising, or you want to know where we're going to be here and there, hit us up, KIRPradio@gmail.com or WMMG500@gmail.com, and someone will get back to you as soon as possible. Like I said, it's all because of you, baby. 100,000 listeners strong, and we're going on from here. I appreciate you, and one love.
Yep. Back, KIRP Radio Show. I'm your host, Pudgy. About to close the show out. You know, it is what it is. And I appreciate everybody being on here for me tonight. You all are B.I.G. in my book. Thanks to everybody who came through. Got to give a special shout out to my guest, Ronald E. Miller. Shout out to my man, Kev Daniels. El Presidente is what I call him. My brother, Frederick Douglass Foundation, North Carolina, El Presidente. You know what I mean? Shout out to everybody who listened to the show, all the people from Facebook, all the people on Twitter who dropped messages, everybody who sent email. There's a lot to get to. We will try to get to you in the next couple days, folks. Sorry I couldn't get you in through the show. Also, got to give a special shout out to my little man, my baby, Christian, on his 6th birthday tomorrow. And I just want to remind you guys, right before Ronald Miller got off the air, I hit him with a date, and that was April 4th, 1968, at 6:01 p.m. Was the time, the official time the shots rang out when the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was gunned down in Memphis, Tennessee. That leaves me speechless to really still think about the pain that it caused right now when I think about, you know, how that all went down and for what the man stood for. So to everybody that I walk with, to all the people that I'm associated with, to all the people that I'm affiliated with, and for all the people who are advocates for right and proactive for things that are right for our people and all people, and I'm going to say especially black people in my walk, where I don't, there's no disrespect to any white people or any other ethnic group. I think all my friends know that I am who I am, and I say what I say, and I mean what I say. I just personally think that the neighborhoods that I'm from needs a little bit more attention to some of these social issues that are going on, some of these political issues that are going on. And I think the truth needs to really come out in all areas. I don't ask anyone to be Republican. I don't ask anyone to be conservative. But I do ask everyone to learn the facts and the history of these political issues and these social issues, some of the things that you're mad about that have been done to us year after year, time after time, are done to you at the hands of the same people that you vote for, even today. So, as I was saying, to all the people that I walk with, affiliated with, all the people that are making the same strides for life, I tell you to be careful, expect to die for this cause, and your reward is on the other side. That's how I look at it. I don't know what will happen. I'm not saying that I'm not trying to put myself on the level as a Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King by no means at all. But I will tell you that we're walking on the same line, and that line is right for all people. So whatever waits at the other end of that, it is what it is. But the difference is now, let me be real clear. Because y'all know Pudgy. Let me be real clear. Y'all know Al Tariq, Jamal, Pudgy, P-Real, NCP, Miller. I'm a fight. It won't be no nonviolent here. As I sit across the room and look on the shelf at my Mac 10, and I look at my shirt, this is the Charlotte Boxing Academy that I have on right now. Shout out to the Charlotte Boxing Academy, and shout out to my brother Jamal the True Freeman. I ain't going out without a fight. That's my time, folks. Same time, same place. Next week, hit us up, KRRPRadioShow.com. You can hit us up on the Facebook, Facebook.com/KRRPRadioShow. Hit us up on the Twitter, at NC Pudgy is my Twitter, at NC Pudgy, and at KRRP Radio Show on the Twitter page. Hey, man, show us some love. I got to get a shout-out to Purely Poetic, my man Willie Hill. I was just out there last week, and it was a beautiful show. Shout-out to Chairman of the NCGOP, Robin Hayes, who just joined the Frederick Douglass Foundation. And I ask you all to join the Frederick Douglass Foundation. If you want more information, tfdf.org or fdfnc.org. Make sure you hit us up. Join the organization, man. We're doing beautiful things. It will be a benefit to your personal and professional life. If you need to contact me, man, y'all know where to find me. Same time, same place next week. We're going to do it again. One love.
Real gon' recognize. Real gon' recognize. Real gon' recognize. Real, real. Phony gon' recognize. Still, still. I reckon I will.
Like we always do with this time. I go for mine. I get to shine. Now throw your hands.